We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn. We've got a show for you today. Unfortunately, the show is in memory of Rabbi Avraham Tversky, who passed away this week. We had Rabbi Dr. Tversky on this show over the last 25 years, no less than six times. And we're going to play an interview on self-esteem taken from July of 2012. He came to Detroit then, and this was like for pre-publicity for it. And rather than talking about it, since we had so many times that we actually interviewed it, we'll go over it. Maybe you'll remember this interview from 2012 if you've been listening that long. In the second half of the show, we'll be talking about Parshas Mishpatim. No more stories, no more Bible stories. Sorry, this is all laws. But we'll tie it into stuff. We're also in getting into Purim this week. Friday and Shabbos begin the month of Adar. And so, Mishnechnes Adar Marbin B'Simcha, which means when this month comes in, we increase in joy. So we're going to play some really joyful music. We're going to talk about Adar to tie it into the portion we have. This amazing story at the end. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A Palestinian terrorist was shot and killed while trying to stab an IDF soldier with a spear at the Gush Etzion junction. Not a good idea. A Molotov cocktail was thrown at a synagogue in the Gilders Green neighborhood of London. Police stated that the incident is not believed to be related to terrorism. Huh? Israel, which has been receiving lots of criticism about how it's handling COVID as far as the Palestinian, actually transferred 5,000 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine to the Palestinian Authority to hold them over while the PA waits for its shipment of Russia's vaccine. That's why the PA doesn't have any vaccine, is because they bought theirs from Russia, not from the United States. The shipment from Russia has been delayed for reasons that have not been made public. A threatening letter warning of follow-up attacks was left for Israel's ambassador in India following the explosion near the Israeli embassy in New Delhi. The letter said the bombing was in response to the assassination of the Iranian physicist. No one was hurt in that bombing. In other news, Israel and Kosovo officially established diplomatic relations. Kosovo will be putting its embassy in Jerusalem, and Israel becomes the 117th country to recognize Kosovo independent from Serbia. Serbia is upset at the news. The Biden administration adopted the international definition of anti-Semitism. What's that, you say? Oh, listen. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed towards Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, towards Jewish community institutions and religious facilities, unquote. A bill passed this week by Congress with full bipartisan support will join U.S. and Israeli researchers seeking to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. That's really good news. And finally, this is not so good news. We like to end off with good news, but the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously, that's 9-0, rejected an appeal by Holocaust survivors and their heirs who wanted to pursue restitution claims in the United States after failing in the countries where the art was stolen. The Supreme Court maintains that allowing the lawsuits to go ahead would contradict international agreements. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone,
okay, Luke,
singing music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lining a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We have online Dr. Dr. Abraham Tursky, who doesn't need any more introduction. You've been here a couple of times on our show. How are you today, Dr. Tursky?
Just fine, thank God.
Good to hear. We're going to be talking about self-esteem. And one of the questions that has, I don't know if this is in line with your talk, it's coming up this evening, but that has interested me in the idea of a developed self-esteem is the difference, if there is a fine line or a large cavern between self-esteem and arrogance.
I don't think that there's two possible things that could be farther apart. They are poles apart.
Let's hear.
Now, I think we must define self-esteem. Self-esteem simply means for a person to have a true self-awareness, a true evaluation of oneself. Now, I'm not sure why this is so, but many people have feelings of inadequacy or inferiority, that negative feelings about themselves that are not justified in reality. And essentially, it's a false belief. It's a delusion. It's almost the same kind of delusion, like if someone is psychotic and has a delusion that he is the emperor of China. That's a grandiose delusion. And this is a negative delusion. But what happens is that a person who feels inferior or inadequate, which is a very painful feeling, may take any of many steps in order to cope with that feeling, deny it, or whatever. And one of the things that one can do is, is to insult other people or depreciate other people, giving oneself a feeling, I am better than they. So arrogance, which is usually tied in with vanity or narcissism, arrogance is very often a defense against one's feeling of low self-esteem. And if a person would be able to feel good about oneself, one would have no need to be arrogant.
Uh-huh. So you're saying is the classic line that a superiority complex is just a manifestation of an inferiority complex.
Exactly.
Indeed. So if we're going to talk about self-esteem, and people, have you ever met somebody that didn't have a self-esteem problem?
Truthfully, I think it's just a question of degree, but I think that in one way or another, everybody is tainted with a self-esteem problem. And one of the questions I have is, why? Of course, one of the reasons I am so interested in self-esteem problems is because I suffered from low self-esteem until age 38. I had no justification for it. My parents were wonderful. I was my father's favorite. I excelled in everything that I did. So the kinds of things that people will say, the reason this person has low self-esteem is because he was abused or neglected as a child or had failure or was ill or whatever. I had none of those. And so I had to look for what is the reason why I had my low self-esteem. And that's why I think it's so universal, because it can happen even in the best of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Was there some sort of epiphany at age 38 that you suddenly got, ta-da?
Oh, yes, there was an epiphany. What happened was that I went for vacation to Hot Springs, Arkansas, because after working 3 years in unbelievable stress as the director of psychiatry of a major hospital, where I had no day and no night, I needed a vacation where I was simply going to close my eyes and sit on an easy chair and breathe. No sightseeing, no nothing. And so I chose Hot Springs because there's nothing to do there.
Okay, fair enough.
And while I was there, I decided I'm going to take the bath, the mineral bath, for my low back pain. So the attendant took me into the little cubicle with the whirlpool. I got into the whirlpool, and wow, this was paradise. I couldn't be reached, not by any patient, no doctor, no family, no lawyer, no probation officer. Nobody could reach me. Finally, I'm free of all stress. And the warm water circling it around me. I mean, what could be better? After about 5 minutes, I got up, and the attendant says to me, "Where are you going, sir?" I said, "Well, I don't know. What do I do next?" He says, "Well, before you continue with the rest of the treatment, you have to stay in the tub for 25 minutes. I said, "Okay." So I went back, and after 5 minutes, I said, "Look, I got to get out of here."
You were bored at that point?
Right.
I can understand.
Later, so I had to go back for 15 minutes, but it was 15 minutes of purgatory. And later on, I realized that I had had a rude awakening. I had taken 3 years of constant stress without a problem, but I could not take more than 5 minutes of paradise. Something was wrong. So when I came back home to Pittsburgh, I met with a psychologist friend of mine, and I told him about this rude awakening that I had. And he says, "Look, Abe, if you ask people what they do for relaxation, one person will say, 'Well, I like to play golf.' Another person will say, 'I like a good book, watch the television, so do some needlework.' They're all telling you what they do for relaxation, but relaxation is not doing anything. Relaxation is an absence of doing anything. What all these people are describing as relaxation is really something that diverts them. These are diversions. And so when you're diverting your attention to something, whether it's the golf ball or the needlework, you're not thinking about yourself." He says, "In that little whirlpool cubicle, they took away every possible diversion. There was nothing you could talk to, nobody to talk to, nothing to look at, nothing to read. Right? You were left in immediate company with yourself. Right? And obviously, you don't like yourself and you couldn't stand yourself."
Wow.
That was the epiphany. I realized he was right. And from there on began the search. What am I really like? What is there about me that I despise so much that I can't stand myself? And there began the search for self-awareness, which has now continued till age 82, and I'm still doing it.
Okay, we're going to talk about that. I just have one question before we get into this more. It says that Moses was the humblest of all people, meaning that he understood that his position, but he reckoned that if God had spoken to somebody else at the bush and told him to go ask Pharaoh, that person would have done a better job.
Better than he did, right.
Is that low self-esteem when we say humble?
No, that's humble, because Moses was aware of his great powers, right? And he used them when necessary. Right? But he did not feel that this made him superior to any other person.
Oh, so a person has to really balance themselves between self-esteem and humility then.
Right.
Okay. Let's say a person now hearing your story and saying that if Dr. Rabbi Abraham Tversky, who is the author of how many books now, Dr. Tversky? 67 books, came to some kind of realization that he had a self-esteem problem. Where does that put me? What can I do now to work on my self-esteem? And I'm going to assume that just like everything else, people have to learn how to exercise their self-esteem.
The first thing that's important, you see, before I had this epiphany, right, I was a psychiatrist already for several years, and if anybody had asked me, "Do you really know yourself?" I would have said, "Of course, right? Of course I know myself." I had a self-image, which to me was very real, and I didn't realize that self-image was erroneous. So the first thing that a person has to do is to think, maybe I am incorrect about the way I think about myself. Just maybe, right? Maybe. Once you give that opening, and the person then is willing to look at oneself, I think there's a way to correct the self-esteem problem. But it has to begin with, maybe my current impression is not right.
Okay, that's a very hard thing for a person to do, because after all, I think I know myself better than anybody else.
Right.
So,
and that's where I was. Right? I was sure I knew I myself, but the self that I knew was not the real one.
Okay, so let's say a person has come up with a conclusion. I really am a very good person. I can do and I can accomplish lots of good things, and I do accomplish lots of good things. But there are things that sometimes, from a lot of people that I don't have this problem of, like, standing up in front of a group and speaking, for example, just absolutely puts people into shakes and convulsions.
Right.
Because, I've been trying to convince somebody for a month to come on my show. He says, no, I'll freeze. And I'm talking to them on the phone for 20 minutes, like I'm talking to you on the phone for 20 minutes. And I said, the 20 minutes I spent trying to convince you and you trying me, why not? We could have had the interview already. So where does self-esteem, what is a person supposed to do in times such as that, for example, Dr. Tursky?
Yeah. You've touched upon a specific situation, which I think is triggered by self-esteem. For example, the person who has to speak before a group or any other performance may have this horrendous fear that he's going to say something wrong or he's going to fail or whatever, and he's going to be embarrassed. And what happens then is that physiologically, that feeling kicks off a physiological reaction, causing him almost a panic reaction with tremulous and breaking out and sweat and whatever. So the self-esteem serves as a trigger. Now, nobody likes failure. Right? Nobody wants to make a mistake, and it's very painful to make a mistake or to fail. But if a person has good self-esteem, he realizes, hey, wait a minute, a batter who bats 300 makes millions of dollars, and he makes out 7 out of 10 times. Right? A failure and a mistake is not good, but it's not the worst thing in the world. I'll survive it. The person with a low self-esteem is terrified of a mistake, because that'll confirm his worst feelings about himself. So he becomes anxious, whether it's in speaking or doing anything else, and may seek ways in which to either avoid any kind of situation where he may be embarrassed, or try to be perfectionistic, which is always self-defeating. So self-esteem, I think that I made the statement that if we just set aside those particular psychologic problems that are basically physiologic, such as bipolar, and we deal with those which are really of psychological origin, low self-esteem is present in every one of them.
Okay. Now, Rabbi Dr. Avram Tursky, can we put a Jewish slant onto this? What does the Torah in Judaism say to dealing with self-esteem problems?
Well, first of all, I do want to point out that one of my lessons of self-esteem came from a verse in the Torah, which I think speaks right to it, where the Torah tells about Moses sending the spies to scout Canaan, and they came back with this statement. We saw giants there, and we appeared to them as grasshoppers, and that's how we felt about ourselves. And that statement says, the way you feel about yourself is the way you assume that other people see you. That's a perfect self-esteem statement. Now, what Judaism has to say about self-esteem is that I get up in the morning and one of the first things that I say is, God, the soul that you have put in within me is pure. And I have to realize the basis of my existence is a pure soul, a soul which is of divine nature, meaning it has almost infinite possibilities. That's the reality. Now, for whatever reasons, I have not implemented or exercised all of those feelings, all of those abilities that I have. But I have been created with great abilities. And since I don't believe in accidents, I am here on Earth because I have a purpose. So this goes back to something else about Judaism and probably to other religions as well. If we assume, there was no God. There was never a creation. Well, how'd the world come about? Well, umpteen billions of years ago, there was this freak reaction where somehow energy turned into matter and formed atoms and molecules. And over trillions of years, evolution produced man. Well, that's a little far-fetched, but that's what some people believe. However, if that is the case, then if the universe is a result of a freak accident, it was never created with a purpose. It happened, that's all. It could have not happened, but it happened. Well, if the whole universe is purposeless, it's almost meaningless for me to think that I have an ultimate purpose in my existence when the whole world doesn't have a purpose. And my example to that is the story that I like to tell of two vagrants who were picked up for loitering. And they were brought before the judge, and the judge asked the first guy, "What were you doing when the officer arrested you?" He said, "Nothing." And he turns to the second guy and says, "What were you doing?" He points and he says, "I was helping him." You know? If you're helping someone who's doing nothing yourself. If the whole world has no existence, purpose for its existence, I'm very hard-pressed to see how I can find a real meaning that's going to give myself value for existence. And if I don't have real value for existence, yeah, that's the worst factor for low self-esteem.
Okay, but being that we don't adhere to such a philosophy, we believe that the world was created, we believe 5,772 and a half years ago, and was created with purpose, and each one of us has a purpose then. So right. that then becomes our modus operandi for getting us up in the morning and getting us through the day, correct?
Right.
Okay, terrific. So I was so enthralled with what you were saying, I forgot what my next question was. Anyway, so let's practice now so we can have a couple of minutes left in this segment. Someone comes to you or other qualified psychologist and says, "I believe that I'm facing problems with my self-esteem, and it's getting in the way, and I really think I could be doing, but I'm having problems." What coaching lessons would you give them? In other words, what can our listeners take away today, Dr. Tursky, that maybe they might be able to practice at home?
Well, there are such things that can be done. First of all, again, if he comes with that realization, he's 50% on the way to the goal, because he's willing to realize that there's something the way he feels about himself that needs correction. And that's, 50% of the cure. If he's really willing to realize, then we have to have, okay, now you're going to have to do a sincere self-assessment, which isn't always easy to do by oneself because we have blind spots and we don't see many of our defects, which makes it so much easier if one can do a self-awareness or self-assessment with someone else. Doesn't necessarily have to be a board-certified psychologist or psychiatrist. It could be a good friend who's interested in helping. And there are some self-help books on self-esteem. Nathaniel Brandon is the person who, out in California, who started this whole psychology of self-esteem. And he has some books and some tapes can be very helpful. There's others who've written self-esteem. I wrote a book on 10 Steps to Being Your Best. And one can do at least begin to work on self-esteem. And if one feels that they need more progress, then I think they ought to go to a therapy. And I think that one of the best things for self-esteem in therapy is not one-to-one therapy, but a good group therapy. Group seems to be much more effective for self-esteem problems than one-to-one. However, people will insist, no, I got to talk to, I can't talk in a group. And it's a serious mistake because the group has many advantages for self-esteem.
That's a lot of self-explanatory, because if you present yourself into a group, it already bolsters your self-esteem trying to present yourself to them. Understood. Okay, our guest today has been Rabbi Dr. Abraham Tversky. We've been talking about self-esteem. And have you any new books coming out in the near future, Dr. Tversky?
I just published a new book about a month ago entitled Forgiveness, which I think is an important book because it's a topic that is poorly understood.
Okay.
And people suffer from carrying grudges and resentments.
Okay, and that's published by whom?
Published by Art Scroll Misora.
Okay, terrific. Okay, we'll look forward to that. Maybe we'll have you back on sometime really soon. Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Tursky.
My pleasure.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschelton, you're listening to the Jewish Hour. I cannot say enough about Rabbi Dr. Avram Tversky, and it's a tremendous loss. Unfortunately, because of this pandemic, we have lost some very great people, which just means we'll have to step up and take over. I mean, that's just the way it is. But we're approaching Adar. Adar is the month that Purim falls in. Purim is on Thursday, February 25th. And Friday 26th, and we'll talk about that in the second half of the show a bit. But the beginning of the month is this Saturday, coming up, Shabbos. And it says, Mishenichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha. When Adar comes in, you have to increase in joy. And there's all kinds of songs about it. And we got a new one by a new person. His name's Naftali Blumenthal, and the song's called Mishenichnas Adar. When Adar comes in, increase in joy.
Sadder, Marbin, the Simcha, Misha Nifna Sadder, Marbin, the Simcha, Misha Nifna Sadder, Marbin, the Simcha, Misha Nifna Sadder, Marbin, the Simcha, Marbin, the Simcha.
Oh,
assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mycosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mycosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel, you're listening to the Jewish Hour. I have to say something to the listeners of the Jewish Hour. Last week, we did not play a Klezmer song. Man, I got jumped on this whole week. What happened to the Klezmer song? Okay, so there are, believe it or not, and I don't know why it is, not that many Klezmer songs that revolve around Purim. However, there is the famous Andy Statman Trio has a song called Purim. And so for all you Klezmer aficionados, this one's just for you. Thank you.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Up next, for your listening up to leisure, this is Elyon Bitton from Israel. It's a parody, a Purim parody of Don't Stop Believing.
Just a Jewish girl living in a Persian world. She had a simple life living in Shushan. Just a Persian king, born and raised with everything. He had a royal life living in Shushan. The queen was told she had to go. She stood her ground when she said no. Now the king needs another queen. It goes on and on and on and on. Beauty contest. Someone says she wants a shot. Her uncle loves her. She's in light. He says, sweet. Don't tell anyone you're Jewish. Hide it, and you'll be alright. Suddenly she's on the scene. Guess who's gonna be the queen? Guess it shows that if you roll the dice, you just might win. What a world, what a beat. Still, this is an easy street. No, the danger never ends. It goes on and on and on and on. Beauty contest. Someone says she wants a shot. Her uncle loves her. She's his light. He says, sweetheart, don't tell anyone you're Jewish. Hide it and you'll be alright.
We all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and Methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community. And Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813. Or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Mishpatim. That's what we'll be reading in the synagogue on Saturday, on Shabbos. It starts with Exodus chapter 21 and following. The name Mishpatim means civil ordinances. Now, we've had a theme that we've been working with this last bunch of months, that based on the premises that the holiday has some sort of connection with the portion of the week, and vice versa, the portion of the week has a connection with the holiday. So since it is that this portion is read on Rosh Chodesh, so it's Rosh Chodesh Adar, which is already a preparation for the holiday of Purim. And there's one opinion, which is never done, but there's one opinion that says you can actually read the Megillah on the first day of the month of Adar, which this year you couldn't do it because it's a Saturday. You can't read the Megillah on Saturday. And that's another thing, which we may talk about sometime, but not this year. God willing. So the theme of the portion is civil ordinances. These are establishing societal norms. These are laws which other societies developed independent of the Torah. It's not like things like celebrating Passover or Yom Kippur or any of that type of thing, which has to be dictated by the Torah, or those laws like the Shema or the wearing of the tzitzis or any of the things which are commemorative or for sure not like kosher, which just we do because God said so. All societies have laws about what to do in a case of, say, assault or damage caused by an animal or these type of things. It's all written down. The Hammurabi's code actually predates the giving of the Torah. Just because it makes sense doesn't mean that it's holy. Now, let's take a look at the book of Esther. The leading lady in the story of the book of Esther is, of course, Esther. They named the book after her, right? But that wasn't her name. It even says in the Megillah that her name was Hadassah, but her nom de guerre was Esther. As Mordechai said, it's probably better that people don't know that you're Jewish. Evidently, Hadassah was a Jewish name, whereas Esther at that time wasn't, as opposed to say like now when you say, what's your name? My name's Esther. Esther. Oh, where are you from, Esther? I'm from the Bronx. Yeah. So the book of Esther, initially, when it was written by Mordechai and presented to the men of the Great Assembly for canonization and being included in the Bible, was told no. And he said, look, it doesn't say God's name anywhere in the book. Every other book in the Bible, it said, God said to so-and-so. Where God spoke to me saying, all of them, okay, except the writings, those are the whole thing, we get to the book of Proverbs and whatnot, but those were, you know, you can argue with King David and his level of prophecy in Psalms, no. But Mordechai, they argued, but Mordechai was prime minister, Esther was the queen, they kind of put on some pressure, and it got incorporated. And the men of the Great Assembly said, we'll incorporate this one, but we're making it, we're putting our foot down. This is the last book that's getting put into the Bible. Otherwise, anytime anybody thinks they have a miracle, they write a book about it, they want to put it into the Bible, they'll never end. But it's called the Book of Esther specifically, not the Book of Mordechai, not the Book of Purim. It's called the Book of Esther. because the Almighty was very much involved with the whole story. But as the name Esther hidden, she hid her identity. The Almighty hid himself so that it looked natural. So it makes sense then that as a preparation 2 weeks before the holiday of Purim, we should be reading the book of Esther, or excuse me, we should be reading the portion of Mishpatim, which says this thing all looks very natural and straightforward, and you know, you could figure it out yourself. But in essence, it's really the Almighty's doing. The book of Esther also, it looked natural, normal, and without miracles, but absolutely 100%, the story of the book of Esther was a miracle. What are we doing with all this information? How does this affect us in 2021? We live our lives naturally. And we get up in the morning, we brush our teeth, we get our day started, we get through the day, we put on our jammies and we go to sleep. And it looks all very natural. But stop and think, how is it that we're getting from anywhere, from point A to point B, without the hand of the Almighty guiding us through? And we just have to stop and realize, you know, because now we look 2,500 years after the book of Esther was written, we look and say, oh, of course, it was a tremendous miracle. But they didn't see it then when it was happening. Same thing with our day-to-day. It doesn't look like anything, but it really is pretty remarkable how the Almighty is really running things. Speaking of running things, we got an awesome story coming up next right after this commercial break. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Would you like to get in touch with me? You heard me mention before about the people, all the Klezmer fans that got in touch with me. And you're thinking, wait, how do I get in touch with Rabbi Finman? No problem. Go to my website. Easiest way, www.rabbifinman.com. That's RABBIFINMAN. It's been the same since I've had a website. Haven't changed. The website's been updated, but the address has always been the same. Really easy to get to. There are people who write me pretty regularly that started writing me when I first put up my website, the original Rabbi Finman, back in 2001. And they're... I guess we've become good virtual friends. I've never met these people, but every once in a while I get a little, oh, how are you? You know, and they'll send a donation, which is what leads me into the next part of this. We're February now. It's a new month. We want you to go to rabbifinman.com. Check out what else is there besides the way of contacting me. The show is archived there. They've got this beautiful new player that works really well. Functions really, it's really works. It was set up to work on cell phones. In 2001, people didn't listen to radio shows on cell phones. So we've updated it so now that it works really well. And there's also other ways in which media and other media, which we present Judaism for your education and entertainment. And there's also the donations page. The Jewish Hour is coming up on 25 years of being presenting Judaism and Jewish ideals in an entertaining and educational way now. 25 years, it's a quarter of a century. Let's keep on going. But we are always listener-supported radio. We've always needed your help. And go to rabbifinman.com. Go to the donations page. Click on the donation
that you'd like to give. There's numbers already tabs there. It makes it real quick. If you have PayPal, you could do it in 30 seconds. If you can do it by credit card, it'll take 2 minutes. But if you are doing by credit card or by PayPal, you can do it so that it's a monthly donation. And that way it happens and you don't even have to put any time into it. And you'll be keeping some really seriously good Jewish radio on there. So go to RabbiFinman.com and do it today. Doesn't have to be major. There could be lots of minors. It also works. The show, the story today, I heard from the proponent. I had to buy something. And so I went on, called up this company. And I could tell by the accent of this person that this person was from a New York Jew, a religious New York Jew. I'm not going to describe the accent because then it would sound like I'm making fun of somebody, and I don't make fun of people. So I started talking to him. As soon as he picked up the phone, I started talking to him in Yiddish. And after we got done, it took about a half an hour to process this whole thing. So he told me, would you like to hear a story that happened to me with the Lubavitcher Rebbe? I said, absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to sell this guy's name. This is for public. This person's name is Leib Ber Zilberschlag. And Reb Leib Ber is a Sadegora Chosid. 37 years ago, he had an opportunity to buy a very known bakery in Cleveland. Okay, it was known as Lax and Mandel. It's kind of like the Zeman's of Cleveland. For those people who are in Detroit that know Lax and Gumbos in like New York, it's like a hoo-ha bakery. And he had an opportunity to buy it. He was a young man starting out. He had two kids. And it would mean moving to Cleveland, redoing his life. But it was very lucrative. On paper, it looked really good. Now, the Sadegora Rebbe was not available. He was out of the country. He was overseas. And he felt that he needed to talk to a Rebbe. So at that time, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was giving dollars on Sunday. And people would ask questions and they would request blessings. So he stood in line, and he told me he stood in line for over 5 hours because the line was so long. And he saw as he's getting close that people were just had like less than a couple seconds. And it was like no way for him to present this whole business plan. So he figured he's just going to ask it in a question and see how the Rebbe responds. So when he came before the Rebbe, he asked, Rebbe, I've been offered the opportunity to buy Lax and Mandel Bakery in Cleveland. Should I buy it? So the Rebbe looked at him very straight and said, why are you asking me? Go ask a rabbi from Cleveland. He gave him a dollar. I don't know if he said we should hear good news or anything like that. He didn't say that part. The wife, he went with his wife, his two kids. They went for dollars. They got a dollar. The wife was decimated. I stood in line for 5 hours for that. So this Leib Ber said, Daiganish, don't worry. We got our answer. We'll see. So now Leib Ber's mother lives in Williamsburg, which is a short 10-minute drive from Crown Heights before they wanted to go back to Borough Park. So Borough Park to Williamsburg, it's a schlep. But if you're in Crown Heights, Crown Heights is like sort of in the middle between the two. So it's 15 minutes to Borough Park, and it's 10 minutes to Williamsburg, and it's a half hour from Williamsburg to Borough Park. So they're there already. So they went to go visit Bubby, Grandma. And they stayed there for an hour, and she gave them something to eat. And on the way back, so they're now going back to Borough Park. So the way to get from Williamsburg to Borough Park is there's a highway called the Bronx-Queens Expressway, better known as the BQE. I believe there's a mention of the BQE in a Simon and Garfunkel song, if I'm not mistaken. You can write me at rabbifinman.com and remind me. They saw standing next, this has happened very often. I've seen this happen. It's people who don't have cars. A lot of people in New York City do not have cars. And if you want to get from Williamsburg to Borough Park, people would stand at the entrance at the BQ in Williamsburg and also at Borough Park. They would just stand there and people would pick them up. And obviously they're dressed like religious people, so religious people would pick them up. So there's an older couple standing there.
So he asked his wife, can I pick him up? And they said, sure. But, well, you know, everybody had to get out of the car. He arranged it like this whole Chinese fire drill is, you know, by the entrance of the BQE so that the man can sit in the front. The lady could, you know, there's only two seats in the front. Are you going to rip? So after they introduced themselves, and this older gentleman said, I'm the Clevelander Rebbe. He used to come to Detroit once, twice a year, and he moved to Israel. And the lay bear was shocked. Cleveland, you're from Cleveland? And he told him, I just came from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and I had an opportunity to buy a bakery, and I asked the Rebbe, should I buy a bakery? And the Rebbe told me, ask a rabbi from Cleveland. So what do you think? So the wife said, which bakery? So he said, Lax and Mandel. The wife said, Lax and Mandel is my cousin. Let me tell you what's happening. My cousin has unfortunately become an invalid, and he can't really manage the business anymore. And the employees are the bakers. They're robbing him blind. And that's why the business is losing money. So unless you're a baker and you can stay on top of these people, you shouldn't buy it. So here it is. He had his answer. He was amazed that the Lubavitcher Rebbe should give him such an answer. We want to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope Mishenichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha. So put on your happy face today. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.